Welcome into Locked On Knicks. Alex Wolf and Gavin Shaw here, and we have a fantastic guest for you guys today and the beginning of an extremely wide-ranging discussion that we had. Our guest is JB, Jeffrey Ballone. He is the site expert at Daily Knicks. He is also a contributor for the Strick.land, a little site you might have heard of. And Gavin, we started off a really fantastic conversation in this first episode, sort of bringing people up to speed on the goings-on during this little Knicks mini-camp.
Yeah, Alex, it was great to actually talk about the team. I feel like we spend all of our time talking about the future in one way or another. And we got a little bit of news, just mostly in the form of a Tom Thibodeau press conference about how the first couple of days have gone. So little points on RJ Barrett, Kevin Knox, Frank Ntilikina, and we kind of get into what we're going to expect out of all of them next year, and particularly Knox and Frank. We go deep on what they could be under Tom Thibodeau. So all that and more next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now. Left, now fires a three, and he's good, and he's fouled, it counts, and he makes it.
Anthony for three, bang, that one goes down,
this is all about, back up off the glass, it's good, RJ Barrett.
Becomes infectious.
Welcome into Locked On Knicks. Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Alex Wolf and Gavin Shaw, and we have a special guest today. We have Jeffrey Ballone, a.k.a. JB, a.k.a. Mr. Founded Knicks Film School, a.k.a. the site expert now for Daily Knicks, and a contributor for the Strickland. You have, JB, probably like one of the longer resumes of anybody in the Knicks Twitter sphere at this point, I think. It's become quite daunting.
Well, it's either another sign that I'm old or I just like the AKAs. And I want to say that the first time Locked On Knicks I actually had any interaction with was when we haven't even brought up, when I originally started, I was at the Knicks Wall. And I want to say we had like a soft, like Twitter beef that we got into. And I'm just throwing that right at frame in the intro.
Yeah.
Was that with Alex specifically, or was it with Jared or James?
It was with James. And I think he was kind of poking fun, I think, at us at the time. And then I said something to him on Twitter, and that was my first like Locked On Knicks interaction. And then now here we are like 1,000 sites later, and different hosts and everything.
Yeah, that was fun. I do remember that because I was on that podcast with James because it was like it was one that I was guesting on, and he just it was like a little poke fun joke. And then, yeah, it turned into a whole thing. And then what was more hilarious about that was that not like a month or two later, we actually like met in person for the first time, and we were like, hey, remember when that all happened? And it was like, that was really freaking stupid. Like, why did that even happen? We got over it in about 5 seconds. And the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah, ultimately, JB won the war because James is off this podcast. And he's from Knicks coverage.
Yeah, that's true. James was exiled from Locked On Knicks shortly thereafter.
He's actually not allowed to live in New York anymore. And that's why.
That was it. That's how it paved the way, Alex and Gavin, for you guys to have the full reins here.
It had absolutely nothing to do with James moving on to bigger and better things in his life. It was a small beef with the Knicks Wall that really ousted him from here. We just covered it up with the whole 2K thing for anybody interested. at any rate, JV, there's like, it's funny when we were first figuring out what to do with this show, like we weren't quite positive what to do. And then now there's all these different things to talk about with the Knicks, particularly today. There was just a ton of stuff coming out of open practice and all that. And I think probably the biggest thing was Tibbs talking to the media, which, first off, like props to him, because the Knicks always get crap for not being media accessible or whatever. And I'm sure that it would have been very easy to just say, nah, it's too difficult. We don't feel like setting up a Zoom thing and inviting all these reporters and all this crap. But they had like a legit press conference over Zoom with Tibbs. It was like 15, 16 minutes long. And he just kind of gave some insight into what's going on in the Knicks little mini bubble here. And I don't know, I think probably the quote that most got Knicks fans going was one when it was just kind of asked about overall philosophy. And he said, the foundation will be defense, or the defense, the rebounding, low turnovers, and sharing the ball, trying to get to the free throw line and as many corner threes as possible. And I think that got a lot of people excited on Twitter today. So what was your takeaways from the Tibbs presser and just sort of this first little foray of media availability since the Knicks got to like meet up and have the new coaching staff work with the players?
Yeah, no, it's finally nice as content producers, right, to have some actual news to talk about. I'm pretty sure the NBA requires teams to at least have some sort of media availability towards this. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's why Tibbs is talking, because it was a requirement of the, you know, of the Knicks to do. But putting that aside, I think you have to take kind of the two quotes of one, what you just read, and the other that I don't have in front of me, but essentially him saying that it's going to be based on personnel, how the team style or personality takes shape, while realizing kind of the fundamentals of a good team will have good defense and the things you listed. And to me, that was my main takeaway, is when I first saw him talk about corner threes, let's just focus on that, I'm thinking, okay, so maybe that's a little hint of you're going to need to really change the roster to, you know, get yourself a penetrating guard who can, you know, maybe draw in defenders and kick things out, to get, you know, wings who can actually knock down corner threes. But I think, you know, he obviously caveated that with the fact that it depends on the personnel they had, that they have. So yeah, I mean, to me, it was, you know, what you'd expect to get from him on just the first day of just an informal workout, where he's going to, you know, prop up the young guys a little bit. I think he was, you know, pretty complimentary of Barrett. But then, you know, all he can do, because of this strange situation we're in between a roster that's really from last season and one that could look totally different next season, trying to articulate, you know, how he wants to play and create an identity, you know, it's tough to do.
Yeah, I found it interesting him talking about Kevin Knox a little bit. And I think that's going to be one of the first things I look for out of the Knicks whenever next season does start. And obviously there are so many variables in play, like do they draft a wing? Do they draft a guard? Who they sign in free agency in regards to where Knox will be in the rotation. But I think it's going to be really telling just from the onset of the season whether or not Knox is immediately in the rotation or not. And Tibbs was saying he's liked what he's seen from Knox so far. What else is he supposed to say? And essentially that, I mean, again, quintessential coach speak, that it'll come down to what he does on a day-to-day basis, and there's no sort of magic solution for Knox immediately accelerating as a player. But from what we know about Kevin Knox, like, work ethic has never necessarily been his issue. But simultaneously with what we know about what the Knicks had in terms of player development staff before this year, it's possible he was getting less than ideal coaching. So, JB, I guess this isn't really a question for you necessarily, but what are you sort of loosely expecting from Knox going into next season and in terms of his fit under Tibbs?
Well, it's funny because I was actually just talking to someone on Twitter about this, where that's what we are talking on Twitter, right? I guess typing on Twitter, but yes. But, you know, if Knox, you know, I put out the Knicks social team had shared a funny picture where, you know, it's showing Tibbs and Kenny Payne and Johnny Bryan and Woodson, and they're all standing there looking at Knox, and the way they caught the photo, you know, they're all sort of in unison, have an unimpressed face. So, you know, it was obviously the way that the picture was snapped, but it, you know, I kind of joked like they don't look too impressed with Knox. And someone responded saying, well, he's a worker. At least they know he's a worker. And I guess my thought on that, because I think that's what a lot of people say when they bring up Knox, is I'm actually not sure how much longer that can be a good thing. And it sounds funny to say that, but the reason is because to me, it's one thing if Knox doesn't realize his potential because for whatever reason, like he hasn't figured out like how to, you know, put it all together from a work ethic on an NBA level standpoint yet. He's still used to his habits, say in college, and he needs to take it to an next level in the NBA. You know, that's one thing. But if we're going to keep kind of saying like, oh, well, Knox is working his ass off and he's spending all this extra time. And I know the Knicks didn't, like you alluded to, they didn't have this big development staff around him. But if we're basically saying he's working really hard and it's still not clicking, and now the fact that they do have, you know, coaches that are knew him in college, like Payne, and they are going to invest in development staff, it really puts an emphasis on this year three to say, well, we better see something now, because you're basically saying you got everything you could possibly need. You're putting in the work. You have coaches you're comfortable with. If you can't make something out of that, then I'm not sure, like, what are we at that point? What are we waiting for to happen? You know what I mean?
Just a reminder, today's show is brought to you by rockauto.com. And I don't know if you've ever been to a chain auto parts store, but the experience is that they have different price tiers for professional mechanics versus do-it-yourselfers, or as I've called it during these ad spots, YouTube mechanics before. That's what I would consider myself. Someone who doesn't really do that much on his car, but I like to do stuff every once in a while. And, you know, as a result, sometimes that would lead me to these brick-and-mortar auto stores. Go in, they don't have the parts you need. And then when you look at the bill after they order it for you, you're like, dude, that's really expensive. Like, it almost would have been cheaper to just go to the mechanic at that rate. But that's a problem that is, quite frankly, in the past now. If you're still dealing with that, you know, I don't know what you're doing. I think you need to go to rockauto.com, because the thing with rockauto.com is that their prices are the same for everybody and they're always reliably low. And they offer the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear, like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. They are not going to check that you're wearing a mechanics uniform when you come in to decide how much to charge you. You know, you're going to get charged the same no matter what. And if there are any mechanics listening, maybe you should check out RockAuto.com too, because they might be beating out the prices of your local brick and mortar store and getting you stuff faster for all you know. The other thing too is that RockAuto.com is a family business and they've been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. So if you go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers, you know that you're going to get taken care of and that they're very invested in making sure that they earn your business and have it for the future. So if you're interested in checking out all the parts available for your car, go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And if you decide to get one, write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
Yeah, I feel that. And, you know, I will say it's encouraging to me. I mean, part of it might be just a familiarity thing with Kenny Payne, but it's encouraging to me that, you know, that there was reports coming out that it was actually Macri that had this one that was like, you know, basically Kenny Payne has been working almost exclusively, or was working almost exclusively with Mitchell Robinson, Julius Randle, and Kevin Knox throughout the, you know, this whole little mini camp like last week. And I like Mitch, that's predictable because he's the big, and, you know, Payne is supposed to be a big man coach. Randle, you know, again, he's a big, and the Kentucky connection. But with Knox, it's certainly promising to see that. So the Knicks basically have two new development coaches, right? And it seems like their roles are pretty well defined. Like, Johnny Bryant is going to be the guards and wings development guy, and Kenny Payne is going to be the bigs development guy. And so it's promising, after seeing for 2 years now Kevin Knox being consistently played, I think we could all agree, out of position at small forward and sometimes at vomit-inducing shooting guard. You know, it's encouraging to see now that the Knicks are setting him up with, like, the big man coach. and that's who they think that he is gonna be best under. And like, again, it might just be a familiarity thing, but I don't think so. Like, I think that if they thought that Knox was a wing, or God forbid, a guard, or any sort of, you know, player like that, and that was where his skill set was going to lie, that they would have him working with Johnny Bryant. Because, you know, I just think that that's sort of the roles that we're seeing shake out here early on, is like, you see all these pictures of, you know, it's Kenny Payne working with Mitch, with Randall, with Knox, and then it's Johnny Bryant working with RJ, with DSJ, with Frank Ntilikina. And I think that's just kind of the way it's going to be going forward. So that is really promising to me from a Knox perspective, because I think, you know, we've talked about this numerous times, probably a few times even since the season ended, but certainly during the season. But like, Knox to me was starting to finally show like a small bit of defensive development towards the end of this season, when he would play big, you know, when they had him actually out there sort of as the nominal four, and he was able to guard bigger players and be around the paint more. Like, he was actually getting some help blocks and stuff like that. And he's really good at poking the ball away from bigger players. If he's matched up one-on-one with them, sort of like in the post, even if he's a little out, you know, sized in strength, he kind of uses that wingspan to his advantage to sort of poke the ball away. And I think it'll be a positive development for him, particularly if, you know, if he can get his jumper right, which we've said for the last 2 years now is so clean and so nice looking, like maybe he's one of those corner three specialists that Tibbs is talking about. If they can sort out a role for him that makes sense and gets him good looks in that spot, you know, maybe that's something that he can do going forward.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I didn't even really think about it that much in terms of how they're splitting up the coaches. And, you know, I was definitely thinking more with the, you know, going with the guys that knew each other. But that is a good point. And I think it's sort of funny with the Knicks, some of these basic premises that seem so obvious in terms of a position a player should play, like with Woodson coming back, you know, we still could think back to the days with, you know, with Melo playing the four, right? I mean, it just seems like there's certain just easy things that, you know, a smart coaching staff can deploy these players in different positions that maximize, you know, what they can be. And I think that's why, you know, as much as I guess I gave kind of this monologue about why maybe to worry about Knox if he's putting in all this work and it's still not happening. But the fact is, like, we always are reminded, he is only 21 years old and he has been under now multiple coaches, and it hasn't been an ideal situation for him to thrive. And I think that's what, you know, and we could talk about additions to the roster in a little bit, but I think that's what a lot of Knicks fans want to see this year is, rather than just say, okay, all of these lottery picks, with maybe the exception of Barrett, are just clear busts, so let's just move on, let's see what they can do with the right coaches and in the right positions, like you're saying. So I'm there with you. I was just looking up now. I mean, Knox last year, he was what, corner three, 40 in the 21st percentile for his position for corner three. And I'm wondering why it says 42.5%, but I guess because I'm looking at lineup stats. When he was in the lineup shot 42.5% on corner threes, which is 21st percentile. But a lot of those, like you said, he was as a three, and you had, you know, Randall and Mitchell Robinson maybe playing up front. So it just wasn't ideal to set that type of situation up.
Yeah, with Knox, I guess where I always get caught up is I still just have no feel for what he is like if he hits the best version of himself as a player, what does that look like? Is it just a guy who becomes a high volume 3-point shooter? Can he do that without having a particularly quick release? Maybe, because he's huge. And if he's playing small forward, he's going to be bigger than whoever's guarding him on defense. And I mean, maybe that's the answer. And then he's sort of a hybrid guy where fours come out on him, he can get by them, and he's still athletic enough to get to the basket. And despite not having a lot of lateral wiggle, he can sort of overcome that with sheer speed and maybe like aggressive finishing at the rim. But it just, anytime I look to that best case scenario, I just say, all right, we're so far off from that. So I guess I would just be so curious to see what they're focusing on with him and if they're still trying to build out like the promise of what he could be coming into the draft, which is like this all around like athletic monster who looked like someone physically who could average 24 points per game in the NBA, or if they're just sort of accepting of, all right, that's not going to be the case with him. We got to turn this guy into a 3-and-D player.
Right. And I was actually looking at defensive stats. That's why that number, I kept seeing 42.5%. I figured that was a good shooting percentage. Why is it rated low? It was actually 34.7% with him in the lineup on corner threes. But then just, I guess, to add to your point, I mean, to me, I really feel like Knox, and we saw this actually a little bit at the beginning of last year, where if he becomes a player that comes off the bench and actually just thrives against backups, where he kind of comes in, he works his way into the flow of the game, and you know, he does, you know, different things, and it's not necessarily he's gonna obviously ever be this lethal three-point shooter, but he will at least develop his shot enough where he can be consistent with it. He can score in transition, you know, again, building off playing against backups where you get maybe more turnovers, you get more mistakes and opportunities that he can capitalize on. I think that's fine. It's just, you know, you got to be on the right roster where that becomes a value to you. And I think that's where a lot of these lottery picks fall, right? It's like between Frank, Dennis Smith Jr., Kevin Knox. So those three guys, I know obviously Smith was in our own pick, but it's like they are all, I think, useful players, not necessarily as even starters, but just on the right role on a good team. And what's really hard for the Knicks is they aren't a good team, and they might need some of those players if they stay around to play starter-type minutes, and you're evaluating them on a scale of, oh, well, now I need, how is Knox as the third best player on my team versus how is he as like an extra wing off my bench that plays in the right matchups and can thrive in that way? And that's to me where it just always gets tough on how to evaluate Knox.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, it'll certainly be intriguing. I don't know if I'm willing to totally get rid of my Rashard Lewis comp yet, but I think it's starting to fade away a little bit. But I do think that there's a chance that he could still become a really good role player. I mean, it's easy to forget, but like he's still, I'm trying to think how exactly old Knox is at this point, but he's like at least a year younger than Obi Toppin still. Which Obi Toppin is just sort of this like fun benchmark to hold up against a bunch of recent lottery picks this year, right. Since he's like 27 years old, but I think he's actually like 22 and a half, but at any rate, you know, Knox is still really young. Like there are plenty of players.
He literally just turned 21.
Oh yeah, that's right. Because he's an August baby. Yeah. I forgot about that because that's why he was only 18 when he was in summer league. And then he turned 19, like right before the season, his rookie year. So yeah, I mean, he just turned 21 years old. I mean, there's plenty of players coming out in this year's draft that are older than him, including, you know, a couple lottery picks even. So, you know, I'm willing to still wait on him. Like, it was always for sure that he was going to be a project. Now he's got his former, you know, development coach from Kentucky, which you could probably argue his time at Kentucky was when he looked the best of any point in his basketball career. Working with him now to try to get him right, as a former Knick coach once said. So hopefully that can happen. I did want to move to another player, though. I've been interested by all the discussion around RJ Barrett. Mark Berman, in particular, friend of the show, has had some effusive praise for RJ Barrett. And I actually want to read like a little portion of his one article about RJ and his all-rookie team snub, which like Berman really took to heart. So I'm just going to read this little excerpt real quick. So he said, at age 19 and playing without a point guard who was looking for him, the 6'7" Barrett averaged 14.6 points. He was a terrific rebounder for a guard, 5 per game, and often made the right passes, 2.6 assists, despite not having a strong supporting cast. And there's something to be said about Barrett gracefully handling the microscope of being the number 3 pick and Knicks' savior, the type of scrutiny Kevin Durant wanted no part of. As for intangibles, Barrett logged 30.4 minutes a night and was extremely durable, something a certain Latvian former high lottery pick has never displayed still.
Everyone pulled out all the hits.
Oh, man. He just busted it all out in one shot. He unloaded the whole clip on that one little exchange. But I love Berman. I've been really intrigued by everything coming out about RJ so far. You know, Berman has said that he came into camp looking ripped, his words. And, I mean, to look at him, I mean, I always thought RJ looked like he was in really good shape to begin with. So I don't see a huge difference in his physique. But all the stuff coming out so far has been pretty positive. And I don't know about you guys, but to me, so far at least, it seems like Tibbs has taken the most interest and the most liking in RJ, which probably makes sense considering, like, RJ's sort of, he's like the franchise wing player right now. So it kind of makes sense that Tibbs would be looking at him, because Tibbs has always sort of had that, you know, his best player has pretty much always been, you know, a guard or a wing for him, other than maybe that one season with Noah, where Noah was like the MVP candidate and Rose was hurt and Butler wasn't Butler yet and all that sort of stuff. But I don't know. What do you guys think so far about RJ and what we've been seeing? And like, do you think that it seems, am I crazy, or like, does it actually seem like he's sort of Tibbs' favorite so far?
Go ahead, JB.
Is he favorite so far? I guess I don't know about that. I mean, I guess it makes sense that, you know, other than Mitchell Robinson, I think pretty universally, whether you're a Knicks fan or just someone who covers the league, you would call those two sort of the quote cornerstone players. So I think it makes sense. You're going to prop up, you know, the guys that you have to really count on being the core, you know, the core players on your roster. But to me, yeah, on Barrett, I love the Berman post, because to me, it's like that was literally written like a blog piece. Like he could have someone could have just submitted that as a fan piece to the Strickland, like a guest. And we'd be like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. This guy's a big Knicks fan. He likes RJ Barrett. And it was like, it's coming from Berman, which, you know, as all Knicks fans know, there's a long history of how people view, you know, the New York Daily News might be a little separate, but how people view those two papers covering the Knicks. So I just love that the way it came out. But Gavin, I'll let you kind of pick up from there.
Yeah. All I'll say on that is I think we talked about this when Tibbs was first hired, that there was inevitably, like, personality wise, like RJ is the first person you think of, in terms of lining up with Tibbs's, everything that he's about, like that insane, like basketball and nothing else mentality, to the point of failure seemingly in the past, and to the point of severing relationships with a lot of different people in Minnesota over time, because of that kind of fixation and unwillingness to really focus on any other element of the job. But for RJ, that's picture perfect. And to me, when you talk about RJ Barrett being a slight for an all rookie team, I think if you were going to make an argument, and personally, I don't have a huge issue with him missing the team, but if you were to make an argument for why that was a great wrong done to him, it would be because of that mentality that got covered up by like a crappy Knicks team and a team that wasn't really filled with players who brought that to the table. But like, the guy was so obviously a killer. And even when I talked about RJ this summer, and I was kind of comparing him to guys in this year's draft, and maybe even making the argument like he wouldn't be a top 4 or 5 pick in this year's draft, like I think I underrate that a little bit in him. And that's sort of what makes him special. Like whatever someone like Marcus Smart has in a playoff series, whatever someone like Paul Millsap has in a playoff series, like RJ brings that edge that you want. He has, like, psychologically, I think he has it down pat. And to me, that would create an immediate synergy with Tibbs. Another guy to move on, who sort of fits that description, is Frank Ntilikina. We saw him shooting corner threes. I think it was friend of the show Prez who was tweeting out how improved his shot mechanics look and that he wasn't shooting on the way down anymore. To me, that's really exciting. Any kind of improvement from Frank on the shot is, as much as Alex, I know we talk a decent amount about how Knox's shot looks really good. I've always thought Frank's even looks a little bit cleaner than Knox's does. Like, there are just less moving parts, and just purely aesthetically, like outside of Probably Wayne Ellington. Like I thought, and maybe I'm forgetting someone obvious, but I thought Nil Aquino might have had the best looking jumper of anyone on the team, but it just wouldn't go in because it seemed like, one, he wasn't very confident in it. Two, he would shoot off rhythm. But then there would be these short stretches where he'd get confident and he'd start like swaggering around and holding his follow through. And there's a few games where he got really hot where the jumper just looked really, really clean. And we've been talking about it for 3 years. Like a jumper is all that's separating him from being, I think, a borderline elite level role player. Like obviously, like there's variation there depending on just how good he gets, like whether he's like a 36% 3-point shooter on a high volume or if he ever becomes an elite 3-point shooter and he's taking 5-6 a game and hitting 38-39% of them. But that was sort of the single most encouraging thing. And maybe I just haven't done my homework and I haven't seen enough video, but I just like the way the jumper looked. And it's one thing to do that in Tarrytown. It's another thing to do that in MSG and be able to retain that rhythm. And it's going to take a lot of reps. But if there's anything true or sustainable about that, that's something I'm looking forward to going into next year.
I was just going to say, last season in corner threes, Frank really was the best Nick in knocking him down. I mean, he was, let's see, I'm trying to find it as you're talking there, but it looks like by Basketball Reference, he was 48% shooting on corner threes, which I was actually surprised to see it was that high. I wonder what the attempt, it doesn't show me the number of attempts. But the point is, you hear Tibbs say, well, we're going to emphasize corner threes, and you think about, you know, Frank being someone that we think can work playing off the ball offensively. And I say, I do separate that with him because I think there's an importance to him being sort of your lead on ball defender in a lot of situations. And then you think about how Tibbs, you know, is a defensive minded coach. And obviously he raised that again today. And it's like, well, geez, two of the points that he brought up as basic fundamental are two points that Nil Aquino checks off. So I guess just kind of interesting thinking of it that way.
I'm hoping that, you know, this development staff and whatever can just fix whatever small little things with Frank, you know, just need to be worked on as far as whatever shot mechanic, like for him coming off the dribble that sort of hampered him. Because I think that we really started to see towards the end of the year, and it's so easy to forget. I mean, it feels like so long ago because it was. I mean, really, like, if this were a normal season, we'd have already seen Summer League at this point, which Frank probably wouldn't have participated in, but, like, we'd already be in regular training camp almost, and then, you know, we'd be looking forward to preseason in, like, 3 weeks or less even, maybe even, like, 2 weeks. But, like, you know, it's easy to forget that Frank really started to show out towards the end of the year, and in particular was showing this like ability to break down defenses that we hadn't really seen before, where he wasn't necessarily overpowering anybody like RJ does, or he wasn't like using speed to get by somebody like a De'Aaron Fox or something. He was kind of just like keeping guys on a string and then just picking his spots right, using a good hezzy and, you know, getting into the paint that way. And he really needs to work on finishing through contact and stuff too. But I think this is going to be such a key off season for him. And like, he's one guy that I'm really excited to have work with Johnny Bryant, because it's like, if he can instill even like the smallest bit of Donovan Mitchell into him and, you know, get him to the point where he can feel a little more confident, you know, getting his own shot and making his own shot and then like getting into contact and finishing through contact and things of that nature, like it's going to be a total game changer for him. And then like, to your point, he already sort of has the corner three, like quietly has it down already, which, you know, again, I don't think he took nearly enough attempts from there. So hopefully there's sort of a concerted effort when he's out there, not as the primary ball handler that, you know, he can get, or even if he is, you know, if he hands it off at the top to RJ or something to run the play for that, you know, particular possession, get Frank to the corner and let him shoot from somewhere that he's successful with, you know, versus some of the other guys on the team that got plenty of corner three attempts and just really weren't that good at them. But like RJ too, you know, I think was a pretty decent corner three shooter and didn't get nearly enough attempts last year because, you know, there were so many situations where Randall would bull in a China shop into the middle and, you know, not look for a wide open RJ waving his arms over on the corner. And it was just, you know, kind of a mess. And hopefully, you know, with Frank and with RJ and with Tibbs talking up these sort of strategy moves, you know, as to how he wants to operate, you know, hopefully we start seeing these things. Because, you know, I want to be optimistic, but we have also, you know, we've seen Tibbs say this sort of stuff before his stint in Minnesota. And then, you know, their 3-point attempted rate was not super high. And, you know, they relied a lot on sort of some of the similar stuff that Tibbs used in Chicago. So it's going to be interesting, you know, whenever we get to see Knicks basketball again, which is probably going to be January or something, to just sort of see how much of this actually comes to fruition. But it would be really nice. I mean, I don't know if they're going to do it. It's feeling like no at this point, but I mean, I would freaking love to just see like a white versus blue scrimmage at some point during all this, like even if it's just 3-on-3 half court or something, just like anything to just kind of show me like how these guys look in action, because I'm so intrigued right now. I think I'm just so like desperate to see anything new from this team at this point that I'm like salivating thinking about like just watching, you know, 5 minutes of a scrimmage. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much of this gets implemented and how they sort of, how much they dig into these sort of stats and film and figure out, you know, what was being missed with these guys by the subpar David Fizdale staff. And then like the adequate, but, you know, kind of under the gun Mike Miller staff throughout this past year and the year prior.
All right. That's it for this one. But next episode, guys, is going to be a banger. It's one of my favorite conversations we have ever had on Locked On Knicks, and it sort of continues down the same thread we've been going on this last week with Jonathan Macri and PD Webb and getting into the philosophy of team building. But Alex, I really love the way that JB breaks it down and sort of makes an argument for Chris Paul. And it's funny how with PD, we sort of couched the tanking argument and here's why you should go get Patrick Williams. And that's sort of a microcosm of here's why you should tank next season. And then for JB, he's making the case, here's why you should get Chris Paul. And the bigger argument is here's why you can be competitive next season and it's worth doing. And we have some dissent on that. You and I push back a little bit, but ultimately I think we come to a really good place and sort of some big picture conclusions on what makes successful franchises successful franchises. So if you want a little bit more grandiose philosophy, couched in the argument of whether or not the Knicks should go after Chris Paul next season, we have that for you next episode. More with JB coming up soon. Tune in next time on Locked On Knicks.